Disclaimer. The views and opinions you hear expressed by the participants in the show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Enjoy the show. Cast. I'm Zach Birchie. We are reunited today with the Super Manga Pals original founding member, Deb Aoki from MangaComicsManga.com, and you can also check her out in Publishers Weekly. Deb, thanks for coming back on the show.
Thanks for having me back. This is great.
Yeah. It's been a little while, but we'll dig in here pretty soon. And the newest addition, the newest member of the Super Manga Pals, she was on last time. She's the most prolific manga critic on Anime News Network. It's Rebecca Silverman. Hey, Rebecca.
Hey, thanks for having me back.
Yeah, no problem. Great to have you both back. I haven't talked about comics in a while, so it's good to dig into it. We'll talk about the industry in a little bit here, but first I just kind of want to talk about what you guys have been reading lately and if you have any recommendations or anything you thought was kind of terrible or, you know, what have you been reading? And I want to start here with Rebecca.
Oh, well, let's see. When am I not reading?
Yeah, right.
my handy list here. Well, I think probably one of the... okay, I guess I'll start with my guilty pleasure that I've been devouring every volume that they've come out with is the Alice in the Country of insert thing here. Yeah. I cannot seem to stop reading this. I admit I have an Alice problem.
Wow.
No, it's almost as bad as my Treasure Island problem. I am. It is totally me and my sister Jennifer.
Holy cow.
Just for the two of us. We're dangerous for the industry, I guess.
Well, that's a top selling title, right? Like those books do really well.
Oh yeah, they do really well, and they are a lot of fun. I hesitate to use the word good, but they're really fun. I think I've enjoyed the most recent one, Clockmaker's Story, best because the clockmaker himself, Julian, is probably the only guy who hasn't sort of or Julius. I always call him Julian. Is the only guy who hasn't forcefully thrown himself on Alice, so that's been kind of awesome.
It'll happen. We just wait.
Yeah, I know. He also doesn't appear to have a crippling mental disorder, so that's also nice.
Oh, is that what it is?
Well, I don't know. They're fun.
I only got the first series, so.
Wait a minute. So you're reading something based in Alice in Wonderland, and you're like, man, which one of these characters is not going to have a horrible mental problem? Why would you expect that?
That's true.
Okay, I hadn't thought of it that way. I usually look through my annotated Alice, which sort of says, oh, the whole original book is one big inside joke with Lewis Carroll and Alice Little. But I guess most people don't read it that way.
Right. Okay, so that, anything else?
Oh, yeah, well, I'm also hopelessly addicted to the Umineko and Higurashi series. I'm still really enjoying both of those. I think Higurashi is more horror, where Umineko is really a more of a Agatha Christie-style mystery, and I think he does the horror a little bit better. There's more shock value in it, whereas the mystery, I feel Umineko can get a little pedantic.
Can you do me a solid here and break down that manga franchise? Because just in terms of like what is what, how many volumes are there? Because like I'll occasionally get a bag of books from whoever the publisher of that is.
Yen Press.
Yeah, Yen Press. And I'll pull one of those volumes out and it'll be like book two of the, it's like those fantasy novels where it's like The Dragon's Key, it's volume 7 in the King's Throne series, a Windmaker cycle, and you're like, what the fuck book is this? Like, it's Higurashi strikes me as the same way, where it's like they break it down into arcs, and are you supposed to read all of them in chronological order, or can you just pick one arc and start there, or is it just unnecessarily confusing and they should just be volumed 1 through 15 or whatever?
Well, I guess it's probably unnecessarily confusing, but you definitely have to read them chronologically. Unless, Deb, do you think otherwise?
You know, I have to confess, I haven't gotten around to reading those. They're a little intimidating.
Yeah.
They are intimidating.
I mean, yeah. They're just these two-inch stacks of stuff, right? And it's part of what makes it really fun to read is that it's a very involved and detailed storyline. But it's not a quick read before you go to bed.
Oh, no. I wouldn't read it before bed in any event. Of course, I'm prone to nightmares, so that could be part of the issue. But it's one continuous story that, well, no, that's not quite right how to describe it. backing myself into a corner.
Is it like Higurashi where it's one story and then it's told through various variations or Umineko?
Yeah. Yes, that's what it's like. So there is one story that basically the entire thing is covered in the first arc, the abducted by demons arc, but you don't know why the events happened. And so each arc presents a different, gives you just a little bit more information. It's the same story told a different way until you finally get all the pieces put together in the very last arc, which they've just started publishing.
Okay, so it's wrapping up now.
Yes.
Okay, and how many volumes... Like, if you were to get the whole Higurashi Umineko thing, how many volumes is it total?
Oh, good lord.
But isn't Umineko another...
Umineko is different.
Completely different story, right?
Right. Apparently there's some crossover at some point.
Oh, okay.
But I haven't gotten to that yet.
Oh, okay. So it's a different story, but it's related.
Yeah. It's related. It's all about things crying, apparently. Things in nature cry.
Yeah. That's a good explanation.
I'm gonna have to dig that one up.
So if you were just gonna read Higurashi, how many books is that?
Well, because the Gen Press is combining them in later volumes, but in the 24, 25, I think the way they're doing it range.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
well, so probably close to 35.
What? 35? Wow. Okay.
Because I think one of the double volumes is the like volume 22 in the Higurashi series, but that's after they'd already been combining them for a little while.
Oh my god!
So they're like one or two volume omnibuses in some cases.
Yes, they started doing that. I think with the I don't remember exactly where. Somewhere in the middle.
Wow. Okay. So Higurashi, boy, if you want to dig into that, then I guess good luck. That's like getting that's like getting into Berserk right now.
I so want to do that, but again, it's. I wish Dark Horse would put that on digital, because then I would eat that up.
It's cost per. Put it out on digital and then give us a nice sale, so I can get it for like $2.
Please,
volume.
Please.
So it's not like I really want to read Berserk, but I don't have $800. So
I've nagged them, and they're aware.
Okay, so Higurashi, and what else, Rebecca?
Well, I'm still sort of having fun with the French market. It's one of the joys of bilingualism, and I've been going back and looking at Wataru Yoshizumi, the Marmalade Boy lady, as I thought of her when I was younger. Mm. It's for a lot of us, Marmalade Boy was the thing for a while.
Yep.
And then she's writing Jose, so I decided to look into some of those, and I've been pleasantly surprised. She's much less of a one-note author than I thought she was. I really enjoyed Cherish, which is a little one-volume story about a girl who's in college and she is getting her first boyfriend or whatever, but she's afraid to bring him home because she has two dads. Yeah, two gay dads. And it's just about her sort of coming to terms with the fact that not everyone was going to accept her family the way she did. And it was sweet and not nearly as creepy as Marmalade Boy got in some places.
Well, that would be very timely. I would hope that they bring it over. Do you know who's publishing it in Japan?
In Japan, I believe it ran in Chorus. I'm not sure who the publisher for that one is.
Hmm.
But I would guess Viz is probably the one who would have a stab at it.
Yeah.
That could be nice.
See, I never read I only watched the Marmalade Boy show. I never read the manga. And I don't know if the manga got creepier than the show did. But the show was pretty straightforward about the fact that, I don't know, like, if you're going to talk like, hey, what is with the preoccupation with incest in Japanese pop culture, or, anime anime and manga, Marmalade Boy is the least, like, the most mild, least creepy thing that you could possibly look at.
It's true. Because they did go to great pains to say up front that, they weren't related.
Well, not right. only, well, no, the first episode is my dad remarried and a cute girl moved into my house, and so now we're falling in love. Like, if that were to happen in real life and you were to describe it to someone, they would go, dude. But in a stupid comic book, you're like, oh, okay, well, whatever, you know. But My Really Boy was a sweet little show. I had no problem with it. I watched the whole thing.
It was a sweeter, simpler time.
Yeah, simpler times back then. Simpler times. Yeah. Anything else?
Let's see. Looking over my exciting list here. Actually, I think my most pleasant surprise this year was probably Girlfriends. The Yuri series that Seven Seas put out. Mm-hmm. That was... I don't know what I was expecting. I hadn't really read a whole lot of Yuri before, but what I liked the most about it was not actually even the whole Yuri thing. It didn't really do one way or the other for me, but the fact that the girls were good friends before they became romantic interests. And something about that felt very nice and sweeter than the average romance to me. Like it was more of a love story than a romance, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
It was nice.
Yeah, that's actually... That's a nice little series. I mean, as these things go, it's a little hard for me to get over how incredibly pretty it is.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you know, old school shoujo with lots of flowers and sparkles and cuteness. Yeah. So it's like, and they're making out.
Yeah, I'm having actually more trouble with her second English language release on that front. I'm in the middle of Kisses, Sighs, and Cherry Blossom Pink, and it's that one is definitely too pretty for me. I have one more floating sakura petal, and that's it for me. I don't know, but but she does do sweet well, and every so often, sweet is just what you need, at least what I need.
My Seven Seas really seems to have found its niche there. What do they publish that is not Yuri? Like
the Alice series, obviously.
Oh, sure, right, okay. There's that.
But... That's true. And then and there's that the creepy I'm in love with my brother thing stuff.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So they found their niche catering to certain fetishes. Gotcha.
Yeah, they're good. I mean, they're now available on Comixology, which I think is great. You know, So now you can check them out, and you don't have to spend as much money.
Right. Exactly. Okay. Anything else?
I think those are my favorites, and I've had a couple series that I just disliked. I think I'm the only person in the world who, apart from my sister, truly hates Mission of Love. Now, have you read that one, Deb?
Oh yeah, I have. Yeah, it's about a girl who writes cell phone novels, and then she doesn't know what love is, so her writing of love stories is terrible, so she assigns a guy to be her boyfriend.
Oh yeah, right. I read the first volume of that. That was awful.
Yeah, okay, good. I'm glad to hear someone else say that. Oh, it just gave me the creeps.
Yeah, that was some creepy, weird shit. I the comics for girls, man. You get weirder stuff in there sometimes than you get...
doesn't it just make you wish for the simpler days of Hot Gimmick?
Yeah, right.
Well, I'm reading her Jose series from 5 to 9 now, and it's very nearly as creepy.
From 5 to 9? Who publishes? Yes,
it's in French, unfortunately, not English. But it's about these three older women, one of whom is obsessed with Sex in the City, and they're all trying to find their perfect man, and there's the main character has been affianced to a Buddhist priest by her parents, and he is actually the head priest at the temple where the brother from Hot Gimmick ended up at the end of Hot Gimmick. Hmm. Oh, I guess they're sort of related, but just all sorts.
Same author,
yeah.
She has a couple unfinished series out there.
Yeah,
she's got, like Clamp.
I know.
Former manga superstars Clamp. Yeah. What's the last thing they did anyone gave a shit about?
Don't let Carl Horn hear you.
I'm serious. It seems like, as me, their star has faded. I feel like they are nowhere near the powerhouse they used to be.
You know, I've been meaning to catch up with Gate 7 for a while. That's their current series.
Oh, okay, yeah. That's the one no one cares about.
I'm just kind of wondering, because remember we were all excited. It was going to be, like, simultaneously published, and it was going to be all this big deal. And Yeah, I don't know. It's never quite captured my imagination.
No, but every so often I'll get a student who is in the throes of her mad clamp worship. So right. It does still happen.
Okay, right.
But that's sweet. I remember when I was like that.
Maybe it's one of those phases you go through, you know, when you get it's like your gateway drug or whatever. I don't know.
Oh, sure. I do not doubt that they still. I'm just saying, stars faded. It's like a movie star that hasn't opened a $50 million movie in 10 years or something like that. It's like, okay, well, when are you gonna have your comeback? You know, I don't know.
I've never been a big Clamp fan in that. I think their endings are extremely unsatisfying.
Well, I'm of the opinion Tsubasa killed most interest people had in Clamp stuff. Like,
oh yeah,
yeah, totally, absolutely, it did. I think so.
Why is that, by the way?
Well, it was this big, confusing, messy crossover that people seem to read out of obligation. Like, I've never heard... Seriously, I've never heard anyone praise Tsubasa, like, over the top. Like, oh, I love it. You gotta read it. Here's the story. It's like, I guess I'm still reading Tsubasa. Or I guess I'm still watching this fucking show. it's always with this exhausted look in their eye. Like, I can't believe I'm still reading this. And I'm pretty sure I heard the ending was awful too. So, I don't know. Like, I think that may be what kind of a little overboard with Clamp and that kind of, I don't know, faded their star for them a little bit. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, the art is undeniably quite pretty and very distinctive.
Yeah, but after so many years, it's getting samey. Like Triple X Holic looks different a little bit. Like, just enough, but now I look at a Clamp thing and I'm like, yeah, Clamp. Like,
I haven't really liked anything since Clover, actually.
Yeah, really? See, there you go. And actually, I'm with you on that. I really enjoyed Clover, and that's the last thing of theirs that I read that I thought was, well, this is really special, you know?
Mm-hmm. What was that one where she has that blue dog?
It has a funny name.
The dog. It starts with a P, doesn't it? Media Blasters, I think, put out the anime for that.
Yeah. Can't think of what that's called.
I can't remember. But yeah, the anime first put out the whole run. And
we
then,
can't
like,
remember.
Yeah, it was one of those series that it ended and you just want to throw it across. I'm like, why did I bother?
Yeah. All right, anyway. So, Deb, what have you been reading?
Oh, actually, that's been a good season so far. I picked up Kitaro by Shigeru Mizuki. That was delayed a few times. That's from Drawn and Quarterly. That's the, I guess it's kind of like the prototypical yokai manga.
Yep.
He's
I don't want to call him the Stan Lee of Japan, but he's a cultural figure there.
Yeah, he's really iconic. I mean, before Shigeru Mizuki, I don't think there was really, yokai stories were not as prevalent and popular, you know, like he created that genre in a lot of ways, I think. It's really interesting because, you know, this is one of those things when if you go to Japan, you see Gegege no Kitaro stuff all over the place, right?
Yeah,
I mean, I even went to a town that was just completely dedicated to Gegege no Kitaro. Like, it was his hometown.
Mm-hmm.
So it was this whole street, which is every store had merchandise and food and everything related to these characters. And it's museum, and he's so famous for it. They've made several anime, several movies, but I've only read a handful of the actual manga stories because there was like a bilingual edition that I paid good money for on eBay. But now, so like with this one edition, you're finally able to read a good chunk of these Kitaro stories, and it's really interesting. It's got some kaiju elements in it. It's got like some, you know, what Lisa called comeuppance drama. Like, you know, someone is a real asshole, like, and then Kitaro and the yokai kind of like get their vengeance and stuff like that. It's kind of a cute and funny horror series. It's really goofy and imaginative. It's worth picking up. Let me see what else. I've also picked up, speaking of Jose, Viz put out two new ones. One is Midnight Secretary and the other one is Happy Marriage.
Oh, good old Midnight Secretary. I read all of that.
It's nice now. So the first volume is out. It is about a woman who She's kind of this hardworking executive secretary. She gets promoted to work for this super handsome, super arrogant executive of this company. And then she discovers, and he's kind of a ladies' man. He, like, every other day has a chick in his office and he's making out and whatever. And she's horrified, horrified. But she's going to be the best secretary ever, even no matter how demanding he is. Then she discovers he's a vampire. And all the women that he romances are his meals. And it's so cheesy, but it's so, it's kind of like Harlequin novels, you know? But I think they're quite well done, and they're really, you know, like, again, you got to shut off a little, that little self-critical part of your brain that says, come on, and just roll with it. Same thing with Happy Marriage. It's kind of a similar thing, right? You know, the rich guy, the girl who doesn't want to get married to him, but they get married anyway, and, you know, for appearances, and then they, like, hate each other, but they end up, like, being inexplicably attracted to each other. It's like every Harlequin novel I ever read when I was in eighth grade. So it's there's something kind of comforting about this. Like, oh, I know what's going to happen next. This is going to be good. You know, as long as you don't, as long as you've signed up for it and you just go, okay, that's what I'm signing up for. It's going to be romantic, and it's going to be a little saucier than your usual shoujo manga, which is set in, like, well, like, for example, like, I'm reading Kimi no Todoke, right? And volume 17 is when, oh, they, like, after 17 volumes, they actually finally kiss. Yeah. Whereas, you know, wow. In the Happy Marriage and Midnight Secretary, bam, it happens in the first three chapters. And more. That's the difference.
It's a good way to differentiate shoujo and jose, actually.
Yeah, you know, just get to the point. What else I've been reading? Let's see. There's Magi, which is another Viz one.
Oh, you are reading that. Okay.
Yeah.
Rebecca just reviewed that on the site.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not sure how I feel about it. I mean, because when I went to Japan this past earliest year, like, it was next to Tiger and Bunny, doujinshi, there was all these Magi, mm-hmm. You know, doujinshi. I thought, what the heck is this all about? It looks like some kind of Alibaba thing or whatever.
Yeah.
Which it is. But I'm reading and I'm thinking, what's the big whoop?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's like maybe it'll get better sometime, but it's like right now I'm like, this is just seems like an ordinary, you know, run of the mill Alibaba type story.
Yeah, pretty much.
It felt like an RPG to me.
Yeah, you know, I mean, like, whereas, you know, like, One Piece is a pirate story, but it's an imaginative pirate story. It's an inventive pirate story, and it has a lot of heart to it. Magi, on the other hand, just seems very color by numbers at this point. And I'm hoping that it changes, because I thought, there must be some reason why everyone loves this. But then again, I felt that way about Attack on Titan. You know, you read the first volume of Attack on Titan, go, ah! Horrible anatomy drawing. What's going on here? Why is this such a big deal? And then you kind of, it kicks in around five or six volumes, and you're like, you know, I kind of care what happens next. And I don't know what's going to happen next. And you get sucked in. I mean, you were saying you were reading this, right, Zach?
Yeah, that's the only thing I had to talk about, actually. Is yeah, but speaking of Magi, like, so the anime kind of came and went, and I saw the first episode of it and said, that seems nice. I have no interest in watching any more of that, but sure, whatever. You know, adventure, little adventure story. You don't often see the Aladdin aesthetic in an anime, so, you know, fine. That's fine. I wish it were more interesting than it.
Yeah, you know, I mean, because the main character just seems like a bubblehead, and it's like, and then the genie is like this giant hulking figure with just a flute for a head. It's like, what?
Yeah,
I'm still, like, trying to wrap my brain around, like, yeah, I sure hope you get really awesome soon, because I'm going to give up in about three volumes in.
Her other series that Yen Press released, Sumomomomomomo, I think I put it up in there. That's her.
Oh, God, I hated that series.
Well, that one did at least try and do something different. Why did you hate that one?
It went nowhere.
Okay, true.
I'm a busy woman. Sorry. okay, what was the other thing? So I read the last volume of Children of the Sea. That was very beautifully done and very like watching a foreign movie, because you're like, what happened? Something amazing happened, and yet I don't quite understand. But, you know, it ends in five volumes, so it's worth checking out. It's really beautifully written. And then I read the preview for Vinland Saga. That's really promising. That's a Viking story that's going to come out this fall. They had it in the previews that Kodansha did, like these giant sampler previews called Real and Unreal, mm-hmm. for their digital, where you could get it for the Nook or Kindle, and you could get, like, for free, just giant chunks of all their stuff. So either their fantasy stuff or their vaguely reality-based stuff. And the Vinland Saga was in the Real collection. I think it's really well done. I'm looking forward to reading it. You don't necessarily see a lot of... I mean, I like historical manga, the kind that teaches you something, that kind of mm-hmm. sucks you into a world and shows you that the creator cared to do some research rather than making up shit that, you know, whatever they felt like. You know, like Black Butler, right? Ostensibly set in Victorian England, but they use cell phones.
Yeah.
Oh, it drives me crazy. Especially that whole butler thing. Learn the other names of the male servants in the time period.
Yeah, so yeah, the Kaoru Mori, that woman is not.
I don't know how you get hung up on cell phones and improper butler etiquette when all you have to do is look at the one other element of that story and go, oh, this isn't serious. Like,
No, I know. I do kind of shake myself out of it and go, like, you know, you're not supposed to take this seriously. She's not taking it seriously. And, yeah. you know, you trying to, you know, call her on all these anachronisms is really a fool's errand.
It's a little silly. Yeah. I mean, I get it. I get being irritated by that, but I'm still just like,
No, I guess the only other one I'd say is Utsubora. Have you read that one?
I haven't.
Not yet. It's in my pile.
It's really good. It's about a famous author who meets this woman who writes a novel, and then he kind of takes her work as his own. And then she ostensibly throws herself off a building, and then her mysterious sister shows up, and then it just gets creepier and stranger from there. But it's a complete in one, and it's really well done. The art's really elegant. I think it's worth reading. I mean, you know, as far as like being a nice, solid grown-up read, I think it's really a good one to check out. That one's from Vertical. And I think that's about it. Otherwise, it's, you know, me reading like the usual series I've been reading, like Chi Sweet Home, and I mentioned Kikimi ni Torote and stuff like that. But I think those are the ones that stood out for me this time around.
Chi Sweet Home is still going.
No, 10th volume came out, and she is tantalizingly close to discovering who her mom is.
Okay, then.
I still find it incredibly adorable.
Oh, no, I read the first volume and said, this is cute, and moved on. No, it was good. I never got around to the rest of it. That's one of those, if a stack of it was put in front of me, I would totally read the whole thing.
Oh, for sure, yeah. I mean, I like that it exists because it's been my go-to recommend to people who have kids manga. Mm-hmm. You know, something that's accessible and fun, and you know, it's cute, and it, you know, there was no nasty you know, lopping off of heads somewhere in the middle.
Yeah.
Or, you know, strange sex change. It's like no surprises. Yeah. You know, like Bunny Drop, right? The last volume of Bunny Drop.
Dope. We don't talk about that.
We don't go there. But suffice it to say, you could end at volume 5 or 6 and be a happier person.
Rebecca, you're reviewing Bunny Drop, right?
I am. I'm sort of dreading getting to this last volume, but maybe I'll get my very first locked thread, so hey, that could be exciting.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, it's not quite the last volume. It ends, the story ends there, and then apparently there's one more extra volume after that.
Right, but I think doesn't that go back to her being little?
I don't know.
Okay, that's whatever. What
I'm just kind of trying to shake off this one.
Mm-hmm. Oh, good. that makes me feel really good about getting ready to read this.
Bad. It's not that bad. They don't do anything squidgy.
Oh, okay, well, that's something.
Yeah.
I feel like I could get rid of everything after volume 4.
Yeah.
They don't do... What do you mean they... Okay, so you're saying that it's not that bad because they don't actually fuck? Like...
No, they don't do any... They don't...
They get married, don't they?
They do not.
Oh.
They just talk about it.
But they're in a relationship.
Not really.
What the fuck? Then what's the... Are you downplaying? Are you hand-waving?
Well, no. I mean, I'm just saying that at the end, they just she confesses how he feels, and then he's, like, kind of squeezed out by it. And then fast forward 2 years, and she goes, I've graduated. Let's get married. And he's like, huh? And then he's like, well, I'll think about it. And that's kind of the end.
Oh.
Sorry, spoiler alert.
Look, that shit has been spoiled into the ground. So it's not, that's not a surprise. It's just, that's still creepy. That's still bad.
Yeah, I mean, it's sweet in its own way. Like, she says, oh, you know, I smell an apologist.
I smell an apologist.
But, yeah, it was better than I thought, because I thought it was going to end with them kissing, and I was going to go, ah!
Oh, you mean like Aura Emo?
Yes.
Oh, God. Oh,
I don't know why this still bugs me. I've been reading this stuff for years, and, you know, anything Japan throws at me should be numb to
this. I think it's good that you're not. I think getting numb means that as a critic, you're not like. It's actually a kind of a good line of discussion here. I think because a lot of people are like that, and they'll criticize you as a critic for not being super numb to every weird taboo thing Japan can throw at you, but. If you're that dead to it, if you're that turned off, you're just like, eh, whatever, it's Japan. Eh, okay, brother fucking a sister. Eh, who cares? Eh, father fucking his daughter. Eh, whatever. Okay, if you're that fucking dead-eyed to it, then why are you bothering to write about it? Because you've lost your passion, and you don't... You're not really thinking about what it is you're reading. Like, unless you are seriously not bothered by incest, why wouldn't you write about being bothered by incest? Like...
Mm-hmm.
It should still bug you a little bit, don't you think? Like,
well, I consider, like, you know, the writing that I do is to be a bit of a service for people who aren't as deeply immersed in it. So I
sure. Then your lack of being numb to it is even more important.
Right, right. Because, like, I feel like I have to warn people. Like, okay, this is something in here that might disturb you, or you might not get, or you might not. You need to. It might not make sense to you. And so therefore I wouldn't recommend it to you if this is your first manga or you're just a casual reader.
Yeah, sure. I mean, and I'm not saying you should be in a constant state of outrage. I'm just saying,
yeah.
It's important that you are capable of acknowledging what is going to be shocking to a Western reader.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
I still think that's important to acknowledge. And the opposite of that is being so downplay and hand wavy about everything. So, like, you will excuse every gross thing that happens in a manga because Japan, downplay, hand wave. And it's
Japan
like
needs to know this, you know. I mean, I think it's fair that, you know, like, they're so numb to it, right? You know.
Well, no, I don't. I mean, that's a misnomer that.
Oh, yeah?
Everyone in Tokyo, everyone in Japan is totally cool with all the crazy, weird, gross shit that happens in manga. That is a total falsity. Like, that is one of those things that gets thrown around by people who have, A, a completely inaccurate reading of Japanese culture, and B, people who really want everyone to never say anything about anything being creepy or gross ever again.
Right, like, right,
you know,
right.
Someone who's really into Kodomo no Jikan doesn't want anyone to talk about the fact that it's creepy and gross and weird and awful.
Because they'd have to admit that they are creepy and gross.
Yeah,
and,
sure, but no. But then there are, well, everyone in Japan is fine with this. No, they are not.
No, they are not.
No, they are not. And saying that's not how it is. It's not some Shangri-La where you can run down the street screaming about how you want to bang 12-year-old girls and everyone will just be totally accepting and just loving. No, they will be creeped out by you. Like,
yeah, that's the whole premise of Pipochu right there.
yeah. I finished that, finally.
You did? What did you think?
I thought it was way more interesting every time the gangster characters were not on the page. I was much more interested in the story of the loser kid and his horrible friend and the Gravere idol. The interaction between those three was way more interesting than anything else happening in the book. And I thought the gangster stuff was tacked on and made me just want to read Tokyo Tribes. Like, it was okay. I really like his art. I really think he's an extremely talented artist. I would love to see him illustrate someone else's story. It's not that I think he's a bad writer. It's just that the stuff that I've read, it's I hate to, well, no, I don't hate to use this phrase because it's true. It's try hard, edgy. It's try hard, edgy.
Yeah. I mean, it just felt like he had an axe to grind.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
You know, with MBQ and with this, he had an axe to grind about being, you know, what he thought, you know, was just dumb about American fandom.
Yeah. No, and that's, and I want, you know, hey, I want to read, that. I want to read someone's perspective on that.
Yeah.
But this seemed like he wanted to say that, but it also needed a bigger hook, so he added in all this gangster shit, and it had moments of brilliance, and when I finished it, I'm like, well, I'm glad this is done, because I don't really want to read any more of it, but I did want to get to the end, at least.
Yeah.
I don't know. Bought it, read it, gave it away at a panel. Pretty yeah. happy with my choice on
that. I hear you. Well, speaking of, here's a plug. Felipe Smith will be at Japan Expo this weekend, so if you like Pikachu, come and visit him.
Oh, yeah.
Santa Clara. Yeah.
Right. Are you going to that?
I'm going to try and go maybe on Sunday when Yoshiyuki Sadamoto will be there.
Oh, okay, because we were looking at the panel schedule, and so this is the guy that draws and writes the Evangelion comic.
Correct, yes.
That's what he's famous for, is his Evangelion illustration.
Yeah, he did the character designs, and he does the manga.
Yeah.
So I was kind of interested in hearing what he would have to say.
Right.
I'm not a big Eva geek. I still find, but I'm trying to catch up.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. I do want to, I mean, that's what I want to check out. But, you know, this is going to be a first year for this show.
Mm-hmm.
And I predict it's not, and they, please prove, I hope they prove me wrong, but I predict it's going to be quite a slow little first effort.
I think so, yeah. I mean, we're sending one person to cover it. And she'll be there doing our panel reports and stuff. And I told her, like, oh, take photos. You know, this is a first year show. Take photos of the halls. Take photos of the dealer's room. Take photos. You know, let people know what to expect out of this show. But as a first year show, it's going to be small and quiet and probably sparsely attended. And that's just to be expected.
Yeah, and that's okay. You know, I mean, Japan Expo is basically this is their first U.S. effort of this this humongous French show that's held every the same weekend as Anime Expo is here. And so they have a lot of clout. They have a lot of ties with the Japanese companies and government and so on. And they're really, I guess they really want to make it happen and make it great. But I feel like their publicity hasn't been that good.
No, it hasn't.
Yeah.
And they're behind the ball too. Like their press wrangling has been really
legendary.
Yeah, pretty
already the stuff of legend.
yeah, not great. But before we move on to that, I did want to talk about Attack on Titan.
Yeah, please.
Because that's the only thing I really read.
I'd love to hear your take on this.
Man. God, the art is so bad. Like, I can't. It's hard for me to get over it. Like, at first I was like, man, people are exaggerating about how bad this art is. And then, oh, God. Like, really? Like, there are some shots. Like, he's really good. Like, the author is incredibly good at drawing facial expressions, that's kind of it. Like, and he's good at drawing, like, I feel like the shots of, like Titan will pick up a dude and, like, smash him against a tree or something.
Right.
And it reminds me of a very particular illustration style that I can't quite put my finger on, but it often looks like he drew this in, like, a couple minutes. Like, scribbled it out and then said, here you go. Like, and the proportions are off most, like, a lot of the time. I would say there is one, it feels like there's one, like, glaring art problem on almost every page. It's distracting.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
I've been, like, trying to, like, write it off as, okay, just, it's just me because, you know, I went to art school and stuff, where you get those things pounded out of you.
Yeah.
Like, don't make the head so big. Don't do this and don't do this.
Mm-hmm.
So that it glares out at you. And so sometimes I think, well, maybe I'm being overly critical and everyone.
No, it's bad.
I don't think you are.
It's really?
It's bad art. It's bad art. It's straight up bad art. It just is. But the story's really compelling. And that's what keeps people reading it. And this is a testament to if one element of your story is super, super strong, people will flock to it regardless of the other qualities. And that quality is always writing. If your writing is fucking amazing and the rest of your thing is shit, people will still flock to it.
It just. I mean, like, if you want to bring it back to Clamp, right? Clamp has beautiful art, horrible stories.
Yeah, generally bad stories.
That one was Kobato that we couldn't remember.
Oh, Kobato.
Kobato. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Right. This is testament to that, and like the TV show, which I've sort of sporadically been keeping up with, it's just now kind of getting to this 6-volume material.
Right.
And that's what I just read. It was a 6-volume. And it's still really, really good. The TV show is really well executed in terms of pacing. Like, it's cliffhanger-y. Like, it's doing kind of the same thing as Cafflone did, where every episode makes you want to watch the next one real bad, and you just want to find out what happens. And, you know, the show is such a hit that it's compelling people to watch the show instead of read the comics. So now you get people who are just watching the show and then saying, like, oh, I wonder what's going to happen. They'll, like, hypothesize about what's going to happen in this show that's based on a long-running comic book that they could just pick up the comics and find out what happens. But instead, they're waiting for the next episode of the TV show because it's so well done. So that's good. And it's great to have a big hit, but Jesus. Like, open up that book and you're like, ugh. Like, what the hell?
On the right side, you know that Kodansha's bringing out a volume a month.
Yeah, now
January,
they are.
Right?
Yeah.
So they'll be caught up with Japan by January.
Well, they like money, and they want to strike while the iron's hot, and this thing isn't going to be hot forever. They've got probably another couple of months. The show's ending pretty soon. Well, the show's only scheduled for 26 episodes, and they're already on like 18 or 19. And they haven't announced a second season. I cannot imagine they won't announce a second season, but they haven't yet. And if they don't, or if the bloom comes off of this rose, I would imagine Kodansha wants to make as much money off of this as they can in the time while it's hot. So, because when the show started airing, all those volumes shot up the manga charts. Like, everyone started buying it.
And it's, a lot of it is, you know, the animation production quality is quite good.
No, it's not.
No, it's quite good. It's good as far as it makes the manga look better.
It certainly does. You're right about that.
It's actually improved upon if any flaws in the storytelling, like if she didn't understand what's going on by, you know, if he couldn't express the action as well as he could if he was a more skilled artist, it comes through vividly.
You're right, but the animation in the show is pretty bad.
Is it really?
Well, Production IG is handling some of it now, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, really?
Okay. And, they kind of stepped in, because it was a brand new studio handling it before, and, yeah, there were some... people were referring to it as being barely animated.
Yeah, you see, I guess what I was holding up to is, like, wow, this is so much better than the manga.
Yeah, sure. Like, yeah, there's no big head problem. Like, that's consistent in the manga, where there's a panel, someone will be standing there, and suddenly they have no neck.
Yes.
Their head is just, like, it's out of proportion to the rest of their body and just kind of sitting on top of their shoulders.
And like, the tiny, tiny hands.
Yeah, little tiny hands. Yeah, it's so fucking
weird. Feet, too.
can't do.
Yeah,
I've had some people tell me, like, oh, well, it's not as bad as you say because, you know, the bad drawing makes the Titans look really creepy and that's effective.
Sure.
Yeah, I guess so, you know? I mean, and I was trying to psychoanalyze it, like, you know, the whole business of, you know, Japan being a small island nation and this trying to, you know, juxtapose it with, like, you know, the small territory that these people have to live in because the Titans are so big and scary outside. And I thought, well, I'm kind of overanalyzing this. There has to be another and I couldn't, because I couldn't figure out why it was striking such a nerve with readers in Japan. And I'm really, and then once I thought, okay, maybe it's about 311, you know? And they said, no, this thing started before 3/11. You know, it started before the tsunami and the earthquake.
Right.
So I guess I can just say, like, I like it because I don't know where it's going. And that's kind
of
rare.
Is there anyone who does that whole, well, this manga's popular, what does it say about Japan as a nation thing? not every popular story that comes out of America is about America as a nation. To me, that seems like it's really that's a stretch. Like it's just I've read up to what's most recently available, and honestly, it's just a good fantasy story. It's a good tragic, violent, dark fantasy story that works. that is broadly appealing, specifically because the pacing and the storytelling is really, really well done, and they've introduced so many little mysteries that you want to find out, and they give you just enough new information every couple chapters, and they give you a big reveal every couple chapters. It's gripping. It's cliffhanger, 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 and then payoff, 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 and that's how you build an audience. Like, that's how you make a popular fantasy story. It's a really good story, and that's why people are flocking to it. I think if you try and force some kind of, what does this say about Japan as a nation on it? Like, nah. Like, it's not, I mean, I guess you could, but it's a stretch. There's no overt symbolism in it. There's not a lot of obvious metaphor happening. So, it's just a good story. It's just fun to watch. Fun to read. And frankly, I would recommend, like, if they announce a second season of the show and you haven't started watching or reading any of it yet, I would suggest watching the show. Just because it does, it's a much better looking version of this very compelling story. So,
and it does follow it quite closely.
Yeah, very closely, actually. Yeah. They're doing some of their own things in the anime. But yeah, we'll see how it goes.
The character development is quite good because it makes you care about these people and they've become very differentiated.
Yeah, totally.
And, you know, and it feels very, and one thing that felt real to me was the way that the soldiers would talk about, why am I doing this? Why am I going on this mission to be surely killed? You know, what's the point of this?
Yeah. Everyone's real demoralized.
Yeah. And it's like, wow, okay. I can relate to that. In corporate.
Yeah. Okay. So we should go ahead and we got a lot of Twitter questions, so we should get to these.
Oh, okay.
All right. Steve Brandon OTT asks, for Deb, you compared Doraemon to Peanuts and Calvin and Hobbes. Can you expand on that?
Well, Peanuts, insofar as it's as iconic, it's as recognizable, it is a part of every Japanese person's childhood. Mm-hmm. In that, so that's why it's like Peanuts. It also has like this ensemble cast of kids. So there's this everyday. There's two elements of Doraemon. There is a an everyday life kind of thing, or it's everyday school life, and then there's the Let me start this again. My friend's texting me. It's making me a little nuts.
Yeah, we can hear the whoop noise.
Yeah.
Okay, he's done. So, let me start you. So Doraemon is like Peanuts in a sense that it is a part of every Japanese person's childhood. It is iconic. It's hugely recognizable. But it also, it's like Peanuts in that there's this ensemble cast of, kids, neighborhood kids who kind of interact with each other. And it's really charming because there's two aspects of Doraemon. You know, there's this everyday slice of life, you know, Nobita is a kind of a little bit of a loser, like a Charlie Brown. Mm-hmm. And then he's surrounded by, a lot of, there's a bully. There's a girl who he thinks is really cute. You know, there's his, sidekick friend. And then there's the sci-fi fantasy element of it, which is where Doraemon, the robot cat comes in, where he takes them to magical worlds or he has these inventions that makes their lives more interesting and inventive. And that's where it's like Calvin and Hobbes. Where there's this, again, like Calvin and Hobbes too, right? Where there's a reality element and there's a fantasy element. Mm-hmm. So, Doraemon, I think has always been one of those series that, again, like Kitaro, which we were talking about earlier, everyone in Japan knows about. Hugely influential. You know, the storylines are, the foundation of jokes. You know, like how everyone talks about, Happy Days, like, oh, look, jump the shark. You know, that's part of a shortcut vernacular. For a certain thing, mm-hmm. that everyone has a certain shared cultural knowledge of.
Right.
Doraemon's storylines have that same kind of thing. Like, they'll talk about the magic door or the three-dimensional pocket. So I think this new version of Doraemon that they're putting out this fall, that's a digital-only release on Kindle, is going to hopefully help us catch up a little bit. And I kind of have my doubts that, it's going to be a huge hit as far as, set the world on fire and everyone's going to want to, all the kids in America are going to be into Doraemon like they are in Japan. But, I think it's a nice start.
Yeah, I don't think there's any chance of it being popular.
Not as much as Fujiko Productions. I think in my dealings with them, and I think everyone's dealings with Fujiko Productions, they think Doraemon is the hottest thing in the world. and that everyone wants a piece of this. So, like, remember when Doraemon was named by the Japanese government as the ambassador for Japanese cool and anime? Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, that's, yeah, but nobody in the English-speaking world knows about it.
Yeah.
Except us nerds. And even us hardcore nerds are not as, you know, we don't have this emotional attachment to this character that would come from growing up with it.
Yeah, I hate to say it, but it's like, here's who's going to buy that. Manga bloggers.
That's, pretty much.
That's it.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's
I mean,
it.
You know, we can all hope. And, yeah, I mean, there's a good reason why it's digital only for now. Because even they are not really confident that, you know, they could put it out in a big way and have it catch on as they would like.
Yeah. Good luck with that. That's like bringing over Chibi Monaco-chan. It's not gonna.
Yeah,
not gonna do anything here, guys. Just
I was gonna do like a flowchart, you know, like the here's why it's something not licensed,
right?
And then is it's too old and it's too Japanese.
Yeah, right, exactly.
And it's too long. So Doraemon has pretty much 2.5 of that.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Byreal asks. You think we could see omnibus releases of old manga titles like Ranma or Sanctuary, or are manga fans just looking for new things?
It is coming out. Ranma is coming out.
Ranma, yeah, it is. Yeah, right? Yeah.
Yeah, next year. They're putting out new omnibus editions.
Sanctuary, I don't know.
That's a tougher one. Seinen has been a tough sell.
I have no idea on that one. Plus, Sanctuary would have to be shrink wrap now, and I don't know about that one. Yeah, Ranma's coming out. But speaking of omnibuses, so I got this box from Kodansha Comics, and I had a Battle Angel Alita omnibus in it. Mm. And I've seen these, you know, browsing at the bookstore, and I've had a couple of them come in, and I really think it doesn't work in standard manga size when you have 3 volumes in one cheap paper binding. Like, if you buy that book, the however many hundreds of pages it is, it's like 18 chapters of the manga or something like that. You have to crack the spine to pieces in order to read the whole thing. And if you want to see all the art in it, that book will look like shit when you're done with it. It will look like total garbage when you're finished reading it. And that bothers me. Like, I guess the way the cheap paper binding works on those omnibus titles, I just, ugh. Aesthetically, it's just, meh, I don't like it.
I preferred it when they did the Viz big editions, which were like, you know, nicer paper,
it was
nicer.
It like a phone book, though. Like, the spine was bendy. You know?
That's true, yeah.
And I think the spine is more bendy on the Yen Press omnibuses. I haven't had those crease on me yet, anyway.
Yeah, but the Kodansha one, it was like one of those, like the paperback edition of like a Harry Potter book.
You know, yeah, those spines.
Yeah, you gotta crack it, and it's gonna have these huge white lines down the middle of it. It's gonna look ugly. It looks like it's been through hell and back. Like you found it on an airplane or something.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. I don't like them too.
Yeah.
But I understand the rationale. Like, you know, the omnibus editions of like a Naruto and One Piece are, they're trying to keep it in print and make, you know, value priced entry, you know, for people who are new to the series because, you know, there's new readers born every day.
Right. And it is reintroducing readers to Hanakimi, which I think was out of print completely for a little while there.
That's true.
Yeah, no, I think omnibus is a really good idea. I just don't like that shitty paper binding. I just don't think it works. Like, I think I read Game of Thrones in with that shitty binding on it, and little paperback editions of this book that was probably meant to be read in a big-ass hardcover.
I deliberately bought the bigger paperback so that I wouldn't get the creased bindings.
Yeah. I don't know why. When I'm done with it, I don't want it to look like trash.
Right.
I am all for this new version of I think what was it? I think Carl Hord like coined this term, the aggressively physical edition.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those super fancy hardcovers.
Mm-hmm.
I'm down with that.
Yeah, like Bride's Story or They're My Rome.
Right. I mean, you know, I mean, it's not for every book, but I like that they do it when they do it.
Yeah.
Well, They're My Rome, it's the only book manga. Whenever I'm reading it, my father's around, he gets interested in it.
Oh, seriously? What's his reaction to it?
Well, he's an ancient Rome buff.
Seriously?
He thinks, yeah, my dad loves that stuff. So he thinks that this is neat. He was a little surprised by all the nudity at first because his daughter is reading that, no matter how old I am. You know, that's not okay for me to see. But but he never would have looked twice at it if it had not been in that fancy edition.
That's a good thing to hear. Hmm. He is the target audience, man, if anyone.
I know, the 65-year-old man.
Did he have anything to say about the accuracy, historical accuracy? Was he impressed or was he?
He was impressed, yeah.
Hmm. Good point.
Thought it was pretty good.
Find it hard to believe that someone really into ancient Rome has a problem with nudity, but okay.
Only with me seeing it. Only with his little girl seeing it.
Aren't you in your 30s?
Yes, I am. Welcome to an ethnic family.
Okay, Rebecca. Anyway, moving on. Mr. the Animatist asks, can any of you recommend good online stores to import Japanese manga from? That's a good question, actually. I don't even know where you do that anymore.
I don't know either. I import French books.
Right, but I mean, most people, like, the people that I know that still buy Japanese manga seem to live next to a store that sells it. So, like, they'll have a Book Off, or they'll have a Kinokuniya, or something. Right. And they'll just go buy it in the store. Places that will ship you, like, a brick of books or something. I don't know where people do that anymore.
I think there's Yes Anime. They do some, and there's also, of course, Amazon.co.jp. That's kind of the go-to. Kinokuniya also does some mail order. And I think Kinokuniya is pretty good about that. I think a lot of people, also Akadot, which is DMP, they have a limited selection of some Japanese books. They won't necessarily have the super brand new stuff, but they'll have it. You can also check, The Beguiling also carries some things, but they're in Canada. You can also request things. I wish I had a better answer for that because I fortunately live in a city that has an area that has two Kinokuniyas.
Right.
That is actually one of my requirements for where I settle.
Oh, really?
Yeah. You know, I have to live in a city that has some decent Japanese food and has some decent access to a Japanese bookstore.
Wow.
Otherwise, I'm just a little lost.
So staying in the Bay Area then.
Yeah, you know, Bay Area, New York, L.A., Seattle, that's kind of where I've been. That's what they all have in common.
Right. Okay. AngelX03 asks, with 7C's success with Milk Morinaga's two Yuri titles, do you feel the Yuri genre will finally gain traction in the eyes of fandom?
Take that one.
Okay, I guess in return to... Unfortunately, this isn't a conversation with this person, but what do you want? What is it that you want? What do you mean by gain traction? Does that mean become more popular? And do you really want that? There's not... I mean, it's my understanding that there isn't really... I mean, Yuri is still, as in terms of content produced, is dwarfed by Yaoi. Like, it's still not a huge...
Even in Japan.
Yeah, even in Japan, it's still not really that huge a thing. And I don't know if by gain traction you just mean become more popular. No, 7C's success with those two Yuri titles is not going to suddenly make the genre itself way, way more popular in American fandom. It will not make people think that you were cool because you were into Yuri before these two titles came out. None of those things will happen. You should examine what it is you exactly want to happen with that genre. Because I see that a lot. Like, a lot of Yuri fans, they do seem to put on this thing where it's like, oh, well, no one's into our thing, and it doesn't get any kind of recognition, and yada, yada, yada.
Mm.
And I don't know what they want. I don't know what they want out of...
Do they want validation, or do they want to be popular so more stuff will become over?
That's usually going to be the answer. Like, well, we just want more of it published here. And sure, okay, fine. But it's my understanding that a chunk of it is published here, and mm-hmm. there could be more. But I don't know. It doesn't seem like this downtrod thing that is just in desperate need of, I don't know, recognition or anything.
Yeah, I ask the same question. I mean, I do understand that there's a big fandom, and they, you know, everyone wants more of what they want to come over. But it, like you were saying, it's a niche in Japan as well. Right, so, right. Yeah, I mean, if you want validation, you might have to look elsewhere. I mean, would you, like you said, would you, hypothetical fan, be happy if everyone loved Yuri? Or would you be offended?
Yeah.
Like, oh, now it's uncool. Like Don Ed Hardy shirts. Once upon them, they were cool. Then the douchebags started wearing them. I mean,
Let's get one thing straight. No one but douchebags ever wore Ed Hardy. Yeah, take that, Ed Hardy. okay. Ninjas asks, when are the Manga Pals going to appear in a franchise crossover with the Super Nerds? Probably never, because... two different... I thought about doing that, and I'm like, well, these are two completely different topics, so... Yeah.
Talk over each other.
Yeah, yeah, right.
It's like when you go to a panel and there's 10 people on the panel and no one gets a word in edgewise.
Mm, yeah. I don't know. We did a live Ancast out at Otakon, and we had a full like 7 people, and it was okay. And hey, Mike Tool and Daryl Surratt were on that panel, so we nice. still did fine. all right, DMH2148 asks, manga hiatus. Besides the author having health or personal issues, is it normal for manga to drop from existence?
For bad sales?
That's generally why, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if it's not selling well in Japan or America, you know, it's not the preferred way. I think most publishers would much rather finish it off.
Yeah.
But, you know, given how the industry is right now, where they're just kind of clawing back and just reaching its plateau, they're nowhere near the peak they were, you know, a couple of years ago. It's come down to telling the fans, look, do you want me to keep publishing this one book that maybe a handful of you read, or do you want us to put money towards a new series that maybe more of you want? We can't do both.
Right.
Like, you know, if you have like Kaze Hikaru, which is a shoujo title, it comes out maybe once a year. Only a handful of people really read it, but, you know, I'll give Viz credit for continuing to put it out. But, you know, they have to make these kind of calls.
Cecil234 asks, very simple question, do you prefer manga in hardback when it's available or still prefer paperback?
I'll take it however I can get it.
Yeah, pretty much. I'm not picky.
But, I mean, if there's a hardback version, if say, like, you have a manga's coming out and they offer it in hardback, paperback, and digital, which one do you get?
Depends on the series. Like if a Bride Story came out on all three formats, I would definitely buy the hardcover because it's that good and it's worth having, and I want to keep it forever, and I don't want to be subject to the whims of a company going under and then all of a sudden poof, there goes the digital. Also, I would like reading it over and over again. But you know, if there's a manga that I consider be, you know, semi-disposable, goofy fun, like, say, oh, I don't know, Iore, I guess, where I don't expect to read it more than once, paperback's just fine. Digital is just fine.
I don't think I would ever choose digital deliberately if I had other choices, just because I'm a physical media girl. I really like the whole holding the book, turning the pages experience. But yeah, otherwise, I think I would make that same choice based on rereadability. I might also, if I'm just enough of a shelf snob to think, well, do I have most of the series in paperback or hardcover? And I want it to look nice. But I think rereadability would probably be my biggest issue when I was choosing.
Yeah.
I've reconsidered rebuying the new Lone Wolf and Cub omnibuses because they are, the print size is a lot bigger than it was in the original. Yeah.
Those weird little half-size books. Ugh.
They're tiny. That would be the only exception.
Yeah, I agree with the hardback stuff on books where you really just, you want like a really nice edition of it. So like I have those hardback Nausicaa books. I'm buying the Fantagraphics Carl Barks library like as it comes out.
Those are beautiful.
The Donald Duck stuff, yeah. I want like a nice hard copy of those. Not only that, because none of that shit's available digitally, and it goes out of print like right away. So, yeah. You know, I have Uncle Scrooge books that are worth like $100 now just because they've been out of print for so long.
Get out of here!
yeah, totally.
Oh my god, those! I grew up on those. Those are great stories. A lot of them are hugely politically incorrect, but they're great stories.
Not so much. That stuff's a little overplayed. Like it's way less politically incorrect than like Tintin.
That's a good
point. You know. Okay. Let's see here. Oop, I think I missed the. I was going to close on this question, and I think somehow I passed it up. Okay. Zandra asks about this, and we got a couple. It sparked a little bit of a conversation, and I did want to talk about it. She asks, "Why is so much Jose and boys love, quote unquote, rapey? So there's a lot of rape in it, or rape culture stuff in it. And I would say this applies to shoujo manga too.
Yeah,
especially since they tend to be written by women. And I have this question as well because Rebecca, you review a lot of shoujo stuff.
I do,
and it seems like." I would say one out of every four has some mention of some uncomfortable rape thing in it.
Mm-hmm.
And what the fuck?
That's a fair question and probably the only way it could be asked. I can't speak specifically to manga necessarily, but in terms of the romance genre, in a literary sense, as a whole big thing, there is a subset that is rape romance specifically that became really popular in the Western world, and I think that did go over the Eastern a little bit too in 1978 when a book called Shanna was published. And that was one of the first really publicized rape romance novels. And things just sort of escalated from there. There are people who find that idea of being overpowered attractive. Creeps me out, but you know, that's not my thing. as to why it turns up so much in manga, I've been wondering about that a lot. It bothers me that it's really hard to find yaoi that doesn't involve that. Mm-hmm. And its prevalence in shoujo manga I find much more troubling than its prevalence in jose, and actually I see it more in shoujo than I've seen in jose, and that is just setting a really bad example. I don't know if it's something to do with gender roles in Japanese culture. I feel like that's too easy an answer and probably too
reductive.
Niche an answer.
I would say reductive, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But it's... and there are a couple of authors who are really particularly bad with it. Good old Mayu Shinjo seems to have gotten away from that to a certain extent. Demon Love Spell doesn't. He's much less vicious than some of her other heroes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, silly as that story may be, it's not Love Celeb, where in the second to last volume they've been having consensual sex, and all of a sudden there's a big rape scene. And she's at least getting away from that. But
Was that Sensual Phrase?
A central phrase in central phrase there was a rape scene where someone else raped Aine, and the same thing happened in Ha Aiden, which was supposed to get released in English, and then someone said, "What the hell were we thinking?" and that went away. That Love Celeb is, I think she wrote it right before Aore. It didn't come out in English. I read the Italian, and it's the hero who rapes the heroine in the second to last volume. He's mad at her.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Yes, I did not.
It was actually more disturbing in some ways than some of her other stuff because it was the romantic lead who raped her.
Wow.
Yeah, and Ha Aiden definitely tread that ground as well.
No kidding.
Yeah, she's a difficult author.
Yeah. I personally think that it's not in every book. You don't find it in every single one, but you do have to, I guess, in that case, it is also the duty of the reviewer to kind of give you some warning so that if that's not your thing, look elsewhere. I don't think anything is served by saying, none of this should exist. It exists. Some people enjoy reading it and it sells. I'm not saying it sells, enough to justify bringing over lots of it. It is disturbing no matter what.
Yeah.
But it
the topic is just really just profoundly fucking uncomfortable. But the prevalence of it in shoujo manga is pretty unsettling to me. And I look at people complaining about stuff like Twilight, and I look at them and I think, if only you knew. Like, the worst thing about Twilight is that it's pushing this obnoxious Christian idea that the only positive or meaningful type of sex is something that happens after marriage. You know, it's not a particularly progressive view on sexuality. That's about the worst thing in Twilight. Like, there's not a lot of rape culture in those books. It's pretty much none, actually. But that's kind of, you know, speaking of, like, you know, prototypical YA stuff, that's about as bad as it gets. I mean, I would imagine there are plenty of YA books out there that get real disgusting with it, but nowhere near the kind of the level of rape that you see in shoujo to a lesser extent, josei manga. Mm-hmm. I think it's a really bad thing. I think it's kind of, I don't have an answer for that question. I don't know why that stuff is the way it is, but obviously it must be a popular enough trope, a popular enough fantasy for it to sell, because there's a hell of a lot of it. And the only reason that they make a hell of a lot of anything is because it sells. So, I don't know.
As a female, right? I mean, as a female, I think in either culture, there's just always this there's these competing messages, these mixed messages you get, which is, you must be pure, you must save your virginity, you must be, you know, be a good girl. Mm. But not to put too fine a point on it, but sex is fun.
Right.
So. And how do you reconcile the fact that you want to do something that's fun, that makes you feel close to someone you love, with something that your church, your parents, or whatever tell you is bad? Simple. You get it. It's taken out of your hands. It's something that is beyond your control.
Oh, that's an interesting point.
So I mean, I don't know. I mean, this is something I'm sure theses have been written about, but
positive. Yeah.
You know, but I don't think there's any one answer. It is not unique to Japan. You know, this, the rape fantasy is not unique to Japan. It's not,
of course,
a uniquely Japanese pop culture sickness.
It just seems to show up in comics for teenagers there a little more often than it shows up anywhere else.
This is true.
I'm, you're right. Most of the YA here is not quite that bad.
Yeah.
Well, I think we have, like, we come, the culture about sex here is much, I guess, much more restrictive. I mean, because, you know, Japan is not, well, let's call a spade a spade. They're not really very Christian, right?
No.
Christianity is not a big, major moral judgmental force there. So there is always that. But as far as, you know, but with, at the same time, I don't want anyone to get the idea that Japanese people are a bunch of, you know, crazy sex fiends where anything goes, you know?
No, it's not better or worse. It's just different.
It's different.
You kind of always have to look at it that way. But I would argue that the prevalence of rape as a plot device, as a character device in shoujo and comics like that, objectively worse. I think I can make a judgment call on that one and say, like, yeah, this is bad.
Yeah.
This is not a good thing. It really, yeah. Because I don't know about, obviously, it with you two, like, you guys have to be a little bit more accepting of it, and or not necessarily accepting of it, but understanding or otherwise saying, like, okay, well, here we go again, you know, but you keep reading. Mm-hmm. Whereas I get to that part and I'm like, fuck this, you know, you keep reading that.
You get to bail on, we're stuck reading this stuff.
We have to stay on the ride till the end of the ride. We don't get to pull the eject switch.
Yeah, right. I got that eject button. It's like, oh, don't rape me, but please do. I just hit the fucking eject button. I'm out. Anyway. Well, I'm glad we talked about that a little bit. That's a real complicated subject, and maybe one of these days we'll devote like a show to it and bring on a couple of different people to talk.
It might be interesting to bring on a real outside expert.
Yeah, that would be interesting.
Yeah,
even just like a sex therapist or somebody.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, exactly. That's
like
what
that.
I mean.
Like, that would be. When, yeah, I think that would
not
be
someone talking about comics, but just, you know,
right. Well, you give them a big stack of shoujo manga, and you're like, here, read all of this, and then come on and tell us what you thought. And they're just, like, traumatized.
That'd be hilarious.
Like, oh, my God.
The possibilities. Oh, my God.
Teenagers read this? Yeah.
Oh, my goodness, yes.
Anyway, that about wraps it up. Thank you guys both so much for coming on and taking those questions. And, yeah, it's, once again, great to have you on.
Thank you so much, Zach. This was fun.
Yes, it was. Thank you.
Okay, that's our show. Big thanks to Deb and Rebecca for stopping by. The theme song is Bucharest. It's by the band The New Division. You can check them out at newdivisionmusic.com. Don't forget, subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave us a little rating and review. We'd really appreciate it. And we'll see you all next week.